From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. Over the weekend, we learned that a former Boise police captain was speaking at the American Renaissance Conference in Burns, Tennessee. The organization's website is part of the New Century Foundation, which the Southern Poverty Law Center calls, quote, a self-styled think tank that promotes pseudo-scientific studies and research that purport to show the inferiority of blacks to whites, unquote. American Renaissance portrays whites as superior to black people. It also says people of color commit more crimes than white people do. Now, according to the Idaho Statesman, this retired Boise police captain, Matthew Bringelson, has appeared before on that website under the apparent pseudonym of Daniel Vineyard. Vineyard wrote web posts for the blog site, and was interviewed at one point talking about what it's like to be a white cop. Let's take a listen to what he said in September.
So I often tell, when you and I have conversations, it's whatever the worst crime of the day is, it's usually either a black person or somebody, a non-white. I mean, of course, white people do DUIs, they do domestic violence, they steal. But when it's something where you pause and go, holy cow, I can't believe that happened in this town, it's almost without exception, it's somebody that's not from there and is a black person. It's almost without fail.
Since news came out this weekend, the Boise Mayor's Office, the Boise Police Department, and many others have condemned Bringelson's views. Boise Mayor Lauren McClain said she is launching a full investigation. So joining us now to talk about all of this are Boise City Council members Patrick Bajant and Lisa Sanchez. Joe Andreoli, the past president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge No. 11, and Brian Holland, public information officer with the International Brotherhood of Police Officers Local No. 486. I want to thank you all for coming on the program today and being willing to discuss this.
Hi, Gemma.
Thank you, Gemma.
So first, I want to know what your very first reaction was when you heard about this over the weekend. Patrick, I'll start with you.
Well, thanks for having us today, Gemma. I really appreciate it. I think my initial reaction was a lot like a lot of people's. It was disgust, that kind of revolted feeling that you get in the pit of your stomach, and a fair amount of anger. This person has single-handedly tarnished the reputation of the Boise Police Department. His words and his actions are a stain on the profession. And the men and women that I know take their jobs and take this community very seriously. They're as sick as the rest of us. And speaking for myself, I certainly still feel a lot of anger over this.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, your feelings when you first heard about this?
Thank you, Gemma. Well, I guess my feelings are, as a person of color, as a woman of color, I see this all the time. And so for me, I guess what I feel is gratitude towards Molly Conger, the blogger who brought forward all this information. Clearly, Matthew's behavior is an extreme example of what people of color have to experience living in Boise, Idaho. But we see degrees of white supremacy existing in our everyday lives. So I guess for me, it's not so much shock as gratitude again towards Molly mm-hmm. Conger for bringing this information forward.
And Joe, what was your first reaction, first thoughts when you heard about this news?
Well, I think I can stay pretty much along the lines of Mr. Bajant in that initially I was shocked, obviously severe disappointment in a member of the Boise Police Department, former member of the Boise Police Department. And then, you know, immediate thoughts of, you know, how this is going to impact the rest of law enforcement across the valley, across the state, across the country, especially in the Boise area where we've done such a good job of, you know, keeping those community relations and keeping the trust of the people that we serve. Now it seems that we'll be starting again from square one, trying to rebuild mm-hmm. that trust.
You know, Brian, I'm curious how police officers are feeling right now. how they're, you know, are they concerned about public reaction to this news? Because it does put an entire black mark, not just on this former police captain. It puts a black mark on the entire department.
And our union members are disgusted by it. And, you know, like Joe said, we're shocked. It's not something we see in our department. And so the shock is the initial feeling. And then it's anger and frustration, because we do work hard to get ahead in the community with trust and investment, like the mayor stated. But then some of the statements by the mayor just kind of seem to paint us all under the same brush, such a broad stroke. We just thought, you know, that was, we're separate from him. Our union members don't do that. We don't abide by those ideals, and we go out every day and earn that trust. So we just wanted to not be painted in that same light from a command staff member who is not with the department.
Mm-hmm. Patrick or Lisa, being on the city council, what is your reaction to what Brian just said about, I mean, yes, the mayor came out with a statement, a very forceful statement. You know, there's going to be a full investigation. But was there a broad brush that put the entire department, you know, under this umbrella?
Well, if I can take that one first, Gemma, picking up on the last comment, I think something that the public may not always appreciate is that there is a real difference between the command staff and the line officers. The command staff really doesn't rub elbows with the line officers, and the line officers don't rub elbows with the command staff. This, you know, we don't yet know what the scope of this situation is, but we have identified a problem with a member of the command staff here. And without guessing or speculating as to what, in, you know, future investigations are going to reveal, my initial reaction is that the place we need to look first for potential failures is at the leadership level. And to be perfectly transparent, that means city leadership as well as police leadership. We have somebody who appears to have done very appalling things while they were a sworn officer of Boise Police Department, but in particular, while they were a member of the command staff. And, the command staff is not a part of the union. They're not in the same sort of social and professional circles. And I think it's perfectly fair for the union to be saying, you know, hey, wait, this isn't necessarily us. Don't assume that it was us. We're willing to do some introspection too. We don't want this either, but don't paint me with the same brush automatically. I think that's a fair point. But then the second comment I would have is, you know, what really matters is, number one, that we have a fair, just, impartial, community and public service oriented police department from top to bottom. The public expects that. And for better or worse, after this kind of horrible event, we're all going to have to do some work to make sure that we continue to earn and deserve their respect. Even people who've done nothing wrong will probably have to put in some effort to help bolster the reputation of the very honorable profession right now.
You know, Bringelson, former Captain Bringelson, served for 27 years in the department. I am curious, as I think maybe some of our listeners are, how are these police officers vetted to make sure that they don't hold the beliefs that are being revealed by this former officer, and that frankly can harm other people? How does that work? Does this come from the city vetting? Does this come from the police union vetting? Joe or Brian, maybe you can start with that and maybe just tell us about, you know, how maybe that process would work.
Well, I can speak for most police agencies, and specifically Boise Police. There's a rigorous vetting of candidates that come in. It's a long process of being psychologically evaluated, physically evaluated, testing. The psychological tests can get in depth and be ongoing to make sure that we're trying to get the best candidates through as possible. When you start to lower standards or become in a crunch to get personnel, we've seen in other agencies where that's allowed a different type of police officer to come in. In our department, we've held that standard of testing over and over again in different areas to make sure that we get to the core of every person that's coming in the best that you can, and then put that person out in the field and train them to have the principles of the Boise Police Department. So it's pretty rigorous, but human beings are human beings, and you know, people have their ideals. Maybe they develop those over time while working, or maybe they just were very good at hiding it. But it's a rigorous process to get to the core of a new officer.
And Lisa or Patrick, I mean, how is the city then involved, if at all, when it comes to the vetting process of police officers?
Well, happy to give this question to Lisa, but I did actually dig in. I was worried you were going to ask this, Gemma. So Lisa hasn't had a chance to speak in a little bit, and I'd certainly defer to her. But when she's done, I do have some thoughts.
Okay, Lisa.
Go ahead and take it, Patrick.
All right. Well, I did call and talk to some people about this. So specifically, what we do at Boise is after potential officers or candidates get to a certain level in the process, we ask them to fill out a personal statement document that is many pages and involves many questions. And this then becomes the basis for a background check. And so while psychological evaluations and physical exams and written exams are going on, there is a team of people who are looking into the backgrounds of each applicant. And the way it was phrased to me was, we check all references that are given and we check many that are not. So they're out interviewing and tracking down and trying to learn about people. They're looking at social media. They're looking at online presence. They're looking at all of those things. In this case, you know, I don't yet know what happened, but in this case, I read Mr. Brangelson's racist screed, and I would characterize it as ignorant, self-aggrandizing, and, you know, kind of ridiculous if it wasn't so hurtful. But according to his account, he developed these views over time. And I just want to point that out, because you can have the most bulletproof applicant screening process in place, and if somebody's attitudes or minds change over the course of a 27-year career, obviously that may not even be possible to identify that at the application stage.
Mm-hmm. Before we take a break, Lisa, I want to ask you a question. As you mentioned, you are a woman of color. And when we played in the beginning of the program that soundbite from Brangelson, and he said, you know, all the, quote, bad crimes are not committed by white people. And he said, white people commit DUIs, they commit domestic violence. First off, that's amazing to me that he would think those aren't bad crimes. Secondly, you know, when we look at the city of Boise, I would make the assumption that bad crimes would be things like homicide. The majority of homicides in the last 10 years in the city of Boise have not been committed by people of color. So when you hear that rhetoric, just as a person who lives in this community, who has brown skin, and no matter what, that is probably the first thing some people notice about you, what is that like? To hear a statement like that from someone who was supposed to protect and serve for 27 years.
And, you know, again, Gemma, I know that my response initially may have caught people off guard for me to say that I'm grateful, but I'm grateful because I am steeped in white supremacy every day. And this is an extreme example, but when people like myself call these things out, we're not believed. We're painted as playing the race card, being whiny crybabies, trying to make excuses for our lack of performance. We're not believed. It took a white woman based out of state for folks to finally believe what we have been experiencing all along. And so I'm quite grateful that Matthew Bringelman was so bold and telling the truth. But that's the danger, is we think mm-hmm. if we focus on a Matthew Bringelman or a Donald Trump, that we're addressing these issues. But no, we have to take responsibility that we live in a community that has a legacy of this. I recently shared the wonderful two-part interview that you did with Dr. Jill Gill back in 2020 about Idaho's racist history. It's documented. Melissa Wintrow brought forward that legislation to remove the racist language from home deeds. We just dedicated mm-hmm. the Irma Hayman House, a Black woman who was a leader in this community at a time when it would have been incredibly dangerous for her to do so. This is our legacy. And if we want it to be different, if we don't want that Black eye, we have to be different and we have to face who we actually are. And that means taking responsibility. I mean, I know that the union, I know that the Brotherhood does not want to be associated with this, but everything I've seen about law enforcement culture is about brotherhood. It's about standing side by side. Well, I think you have to do that even when something like this is revealed. You have to take responsibility and accountability. I myself have been trolled relentlessly by former law enforcement. So to say that this is shocking, I think is disingenuous at this point.
Mm. And before we take a break, I do want people to know that the Boise Police Department, the police unions, and the police lodge, you all did come out with statements earlier this week, very much condemning the actions of former Captain Bringelson. Lisa, I know that you need to be leaving here in a couple of minutes, so I wanted to start this conversation with you, and then you can hop off and get to your next obligation. But I want to talk about a web post by what appears to be Bringelson's pseudonym, Daniel Vineyard. In it, he says he was the victim of white microaggression by a Boise City Council member who appears to be you. Let me read a part of what he said about a meeting where Boise City Council members were meeting a new Black police lieutenant for the first time. Here is the quote. At a break in her first council meeting, the newly elected person of color trotted up to the five uniformed lieutenants standing together. She put her hands on her hips and pushed past the white lieutenants. She gushed over our newest lieutenant in a fawning display full of cultural signals and greetings. It was as if the rest of us weren't even there, unquote. Lisa, have you seen this post, and can you respond to it?
Yes, Gemma, I did see it. And, as I've shared, I'm steeped in white supremacy every day. My behavior is monitored and surveilled and judged every day. I will use an example just from today. Councilman Bajent asked Hannah to make sure that you knew the correct pronunciation of his name. Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal, and it really isn't a big deal. But I never do that. I never tell somebody, the correct pronunciation of my last name is Sanchez, not Sanchez. Because I risk being viewed as uppity, somebody who's pretentious, somebody who doesn't know their proper place. And it's just the correct pronunciation of my name. But that's a very illustrative example of what life is like for a person of color in a white-dominated community like Boise, Idaho, is our behavior is constantly monitored. And it's interpreted often, and it can be misinterpreted. Certainly, nobody thinks that Patrick's being pretentious because he's letting you know, it's Bajent, not Badgent. Yet when I say, actually, my last name is pronounced Sanchez, not Sanchez, that is viewed completely differently. So I don't think the way Matthew described me is accurate, but that's how he has viewed me. And that's something that I have constantly have to be aware of. It's not something that white folks in Idaho have to worry about, is how they move through life. So being a woman of color is not just my identity. It affects every single part of my life, even something as simple as letting a white person know the correct pronunciation of my name is Sanchez.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to clarify with our producer, Hannah, that she did ask everyone how to pronounce their last names correctly. That is important to us.
Yeah, actually, Patrick asked that, and that's the point I'm trying to make, is, yeah. You know, Patrick asked that, which I appreciate. And I even sent him a message. I said, hey, thank you for that. You know, I don't normally ask because I'm afraid of how people are going to interpret me asking them to pronounce my name correctly. And again, I know it sounds like a small thing, Gemma, but it's an example. I mean, think about what this gentleman had issue with. Something as simple as saying hello to somebody, mm-hmm. that he has interpreted that as me, as a woman of color, being disrespectful to white men who he felt deserved, I guess, more respect from me. And, you know, I think he said something similar about somebody who I assume is Councilman Halliburton, who he referred to as a beta male. What is that implying? So, I mean, but the fact is, for me as a woman of color in a white-dominated society, something as simple as who I say hello to and how I say hello and how I carry myself can be construed as me harming or disrespecting white people. And to me, that's echoes of slavery. That's echoes of a white person being my master. It is not a small thing. How would this person have treated my mother, who was a Black woman, a Black Mexican-American Texan? Mm-hmm. Would she have been safe with Matthew? And I've seen videos of Matthew at a coffee with a cop event from 5 years ago. He's lovely. He's smiling. He's being very charming. That is the scary thing, is that we don't know who we're dealing with. And how do we know who to trust when we live in a society where we are in the minority and every move that we make is scrutinized, mm-hmm. and then we are treated accordingly?
Lisa, I know you have to get going to another event that you have. I want to thank you for your time today. Thank you for sharing with us. I know this is not easy, and I do really appreciate your views and what you have said to us today. So truly thank you for your time.
Great, Gemma. I appreciate it. And one thing I would ask is, if a person of color tells you something's wrong, please believe them. Thank you.
So continue our conversation. Patrick, one of the things that we should note is that Captain Bringleston's views, they are not against the law. I think a lot of people are wondering, do those views violate any city policies? I mean, could his pension be at risk? Especially if he was espousing these racist views while he was still on the job in Boise. And with this pseudonym, we do know that he was writing under this pseudonym while he was still actively employed by the city of Boise as a police officer. The other question is now that there is this information, how then in this investigation that the city will do, will you be looking at all of the cases that he has been involved with? I mean, there are potential ramifications from a judicial standpoint, where can his testimony be believed? There are just so many unanswered questions. So I know that's a lot, but if you could break that down for us as much as you know, I think that would be helpful.
Well, these are questions that we've been getting a lot. I mean, it's the first thing that jumps into somebody's mind. There's a gut moral sense. Well, wait a minute, this isn't the person we want representing the community. Why are we paying for their retirement? Right, that kind of thing. I frankly don't know the answer to that question. I would be a little surprised if you could take away somebody's retirement or pension based on statements that they make.
Right.
You know, quote unquote exercise. It's not against the law to be a bigot. But I also would be surprised if it turns out that he was engaging in this kind of rhetoric or expressing these kinds of views, using city resources while on the job, et cetera. You know, even wearing the uniform of a Boise police officer in images on these websites that he was on, that, you know, that, that's acting under the color of our city. And our city is the community of people who are here. And I think that's part of the reason people are so offended. You're holding yourself out as a representative of me, and you're saying things I don't believe at all. I don't know any concrete answers to any of your questions, Gemma, because we're still getting started. I can tell you that the mayor has committed to getting all the way to the bottom of each of those questions, both with respect to Mr. Bringelson and to anybody else who it may turn out is problematic in these ways. And something I want to point out or add to that is I don't think that that effort is terribly controversial. We've heard from union leadership here, the Fraternal Order of Police, the Boise Police Department itself. There is a unity and broad agreement that this is absolutely not who we are or who we want to be. And I think that is important to point out because it's a position of strength to be dealing from this, dealing with this from. This is, you know, everybody's on the same page as far as what we do and do not want in our police department or in our city or our community. And so unlike other situations, I expect that there will be a lot of common ground and a lot of allies in, number one, figuring out exactly what happened with respect to Mr. Bringelson, and number two, figuring out what we need to do to make sure that it never, ever happens again.
Patrick, how do you then go about in this investigation looking at, maybe relooking at what recently happened within the police department in regards to Chief Lee resigning? We do know now that Mr. Bringelson was one of those nine captains who made complaints about Chief Lee. Does the city need to go back and look at that and do more digging? And I ask that question because Chief Lee is a person of color, is a minority.
Yeah, well, that's the other question that jumps into everybody's mind. Wait a minute, you've got an individual who made all of these racist statements and racist judgments, and then he also obviously made complaints about our first Asian American police chief. Each of those statements is a fact. Whether they are related or whether one was the motivation for the other, I don't know. And then as far as you know, going back and doing more digging, Gemma, that gets pretty close to personnel type information that I have been told many times will cause my head to be chopped off if I violate the law and talk about that. So I'm going to defer on that question. But bigger picture, yeah, I think this is going to be an impetus to examine and re-examine many things within our city leadership, our police leadership, and our police department. And again, I as I said a moment ago, I think the spirit of that investigation, we want to be the kind of people that that Boise deserves, is I expect to find a lot of common ground on that sentiment. Mm-hmm.
Joe and Brian, this must be, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this must be so frustrating for you in the sense that there are good police officers in the Boise Police Department. There are good police officers throughout the country. Yet our country has been wrestling with so many issues within law enforcement, in particular over the last 2.5 to 3 years. It's been longer than that, but it's definitely come to light, in the last few years. And I am wondering for you, and Joe, I'll start with you, what has this got to be like to sit here? And yes, you have denounced this. Your lodge has you know, denounced these actions, but it's almost like you have to now, you know, build this, not just this trust back up, but the reputation of law enforcement as a whole.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, frustration is, I guess, one word that we could use. I don't know that I have all the right words, but This is not something that is new to the law enforcement profession. Something that's, I believe, is new to our area of law enforcement. You know, we've seen and heard for years the national narrative, and rightfully so, with some of the things that have happened across the country. regarding race and law enforcement. And it's always a bit of a sigh of relief that these problems aren't in Boise, Idaho. These problems aren't in the Treasure Valley. We always still feel it in this area, regardless of where something like that occurs across the country. Just like mm-hmm. Brian spoke earlier, we get painted with a broad brush a lot of times in the media, by some public figures, and we're kind of used to that, but never did I expect this to come to our home front, where something like this would come out regarding a former police captain and his thoughts and his beliefs. And I agree 100% with Mr. Bajet that this is not who we are, and we want to continue to show this community that that's not who we are. And I fully expect every member of the Boise Police Department to fully cooperate with an investigation to show and prove to the community that that's not who we are. It's on us to rebuild that relationship. I think we may have a bit of an uphill battle, but at the same time, I think this community knows who we are. We've gone out and done the job and done it honorably for years and years. And my ask of the area law enforcement officers in the Treasure Valley would be continue to go out and do your job and do the best you can, and serve those people who deserve the best and give them the best.
And Brian, I know, you know, you represent upwards of 200 police officers in your union. I am sure you have had conversation over the last few days. How demoralizing has this been? And because, as I said, I mean, Bringelson does not represent the department as a whole, and yet that is how you are being viewed, probably by many people within the public right now.
Yeah, I believe so. The way to combat that is the consistency of our what we provide to the community. Again, we have the trust and we have the investment in the community. Our members go out every day and prove it. So we have to just continue to do that. It's like Joe said, a even more of an uphill battle when it's local as compared to a national narrative. But we just want to be able to explain to our citizens what our agenda is, what our principles are, so they know that that's what they get when they call the police. And we have to continue to do that. We are dejected by this as a union body. It's hurtful. It's hurtful to us as officers. We have to heal to go out and continue to do our job and battle through this. But we will. And speaking on Ms. Sanchez's note before she left in regards to the brotherhood and standing side by side, and that echoes the mayor's sentiment about the expectation or hoping that there's not a circling of the wagons to impede investigation. All of that talk is so divisive. There's nothing or no evidence that we as a union have done that or would do that. We applaud her for wanting to investigate any type of ideals that might be lingering in the department in regards to that, or anything that former Captain Bringelson might have been involved with. We would absolutely be involved in that and not impede that. And I don't believe it's fair that sentiment gets put out without any backing whatsoever. That there's an expectation that we would somehow thwart that. And so I just want to state that we don't do that. We go out every single day, our frontline members, our sergeants, we deal with the public every single day, and we build that trust every single day, every hour, every small call, large call. We go out there and we work for that every single day. One person doesn't get to have that from us. So we will continue to do that. And I just think that some of the divisive talk just compounds the issue.
Brian, have you had conversation with your union since this news broke about if there are other officers in your department who have similar views? Are they not welcome? I mean, what are, because I do think as a brotherhood, there is a brotherhood of standing up for those who are doing the right thing and stepping up and maybe saying, look, if you hold these similar values, I mean, do you even want them in your department?
Absolutely not. And that's the way our department works. There is a brotherhood, and that brotherhood usually is in reference to facing danger, that you have your brother to your left and your right to go out and face danger, to work upon our principles of saving the public, even before ourselves. So that's what that brotherhood stands for. We have such a mindset in our department that we've had 5 whistleblowers in our department on actions that are taking place, either in command staff or in the department. And those have been at times ignored. So there have been actions by our union members to get to the bottom of certain things that are happening, with, say, Chief Lee or some other issues that might be going on. And there feels like there is either an ignorance to it or a silence to it, or maybe even a retaliation to it. And that's what we've been trying to do. Again, as line staff and sergeants, we've have a track record of not allowing certain things to happen in our department, and shown that. And we would absolutely do this with somebody that shares this rhetoric or ideals in front of officers at our department. That would be handled immediately amongst the rank and file.
I want to thank all of you for your time today. I know this is not an easy subject to talk about, but we need to talk about it because it is out there and it's not going anywhere. And so I do appreciate your time, all of you. So thank you very much. We've been talking with City Council members from Boise, Patrick Bajan and Lisa Sanchez, Joe Andreoli, who is the past president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge number 11, and Brian Holland, public information officer with the International Brotherhood of Police Officers, local number 486. Thank you all very much. And I can tell you this will not probably be the last time that we talk about this issue moving forward. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your time, Jenna.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.